You are listening to Issues and Ideas here on KCBX-FM, Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Randall White. Our guest for the segment, Paul Rellis, was a student at UC Santa Barbara during the massive 1969 oil spill in the Santa Barbara Channel and had a front row seat to much of the public reaction that followed. Rellis went on to lead the Community Environmental Council, was an executive with the state EPA, and lectured for nearly two decades on environmental studies at his alma mater, UCSB. He will read from his recently published book, Out of the Wasteland, tomorrow night at Chaucer's Bookstore in Santa Barbara, starting at 7 p.m. Paul Rellis, thank you for joining us on Issues and Ideas today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Let's start with your time at UCSB. Take us back to January 28th, 1969. What happened that day and why was it so monumental?
Well, I was a student, as you mentioned at the time. There was a very large storm that had hit Santa Barbara, and I lived in the hills above the town. I was heading off to campus in my VW. And I heard on the radio about this commotion down at the waterfront about some kind of spill or accident that had happened offshore. So instead of going to class, I ditched class and headed to the waterfront and came upon a chaotic scene of emergency vehicles and police and fire. And made my way to the waterfront and began to see a spectacle of oil washing ashore. And that was a life-changing event for me. Within a day or two, I found myself in a plane flying above a small single-engine plane flying above the spill. And I looked down into the ocean where it was gushing out like a artesian well. And I was kind of mesmerized by the sight, and suddenly it just hit me, this is going to be a world-changing event.
Now, after the oil spill in 1969, you say, as do many others, in the 1970s, the Santa Barbara area became a launching pad for the environmental movement in the United States.
Yes, I think for people, especially young people today, in their 20s, 30s even, they would have no memory, of course. And there's very little in history written to keep that period alive. But when I was experiencing at about their age, I was about 20, 21, this Santa Barbara was the epicenter of the modern environmental movement, if you want to call it that. And I would say this much, one can trace the formation of the Environmental Protection Agency and to Earth Day itself to that event. There are direct ties. President Nixon came out to witness the aftermath of the oil spill. Walter Cronkite covered it on national CBS, I believe he was with CBS. And basically, senators and legislators from all over were coming out here to try and understand this phenomena called an oil spill.
And key to that was Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson. He visited the area and then went on to establish Earth Day.
That's correct. On the flight back from his visit to Santa Barbara, he was talking to an assistant, and he said, "We need to tap the energy of these young people over this concern about environmental damage being done by events like this oil spill. And so maybe we should think about having a day that commemorates the values of nature and natural resources."
Now, you've seen from an insider's perspective how government works in dealing with environmental issues. You've also tackled these issues as a business executive and as a leader of an environmental nonprofit. Of the paths to reaching your environmental goals, where do you believe the most influence is held? Would it be government, business, or an organization?
Well, it's a great question. It's not an easy question to answer, and my book attempts to unravel that question in very specific ways. I've had the privilege of being at the ground floor of recycling and community gardening and green building 30, 35 years ago, when these were all very fuzzy ideas, if you might say. And then having a chance to oversee recycling for California in the capital, implementing our ambitious AB 939 that established a 50% recycling rate. And then now working in the field of bioenergy to convert organic waste to actually the cleanest fuel available called renewable natural gas from municipal organic waste. Well, I can't say that one is more important than the other. I am a big believer in the local, in local government. I think the local government is the frontier for moving us away from the fossil fuel age. We have, as you know, intractable problems at the federal level between the Democrats and the Republicans over whether we should have a national energy policy, or if so, what should it be? That's gone on for over 30 years. Sometimes it looks like a lost cause. But a state like California is has the most ambitious renewable energy programs underway in the world. It's really a world, truly a world leader in both taking us off fossil fuels and decarbonizing, as we call it, the natural gas that will flow into California.
Yeah, you believe that we're at a point now where we have the tools and technologies to build what you call a post-oil age. Can you explain that?
Yes. Okay, let me use an example. You take the solar collector. When I first played around with them 35 years ago, 40 years ago, you know, it was a, at best, imperfect technology. It was primitive. The collectors wouldn't necessarily hold up long and very difficult to get serviced. Today, I had installed a modern solar electric system, which is basically a piece of art. It's a high-level German technology, what I have. You're not aware of it. It has proven controls system. So I went from, because my wife needs air conditioning, she has a medical condition, a $170 bill a month to 11. And that will operate for 30 years at least. It's guaranteed for about that time. And it's out of sight, out of mind, and it just does its job. It's kind of like the three container bin that you have in your community for collecting recyclables. Well, these were all new ideas when I was working on them as a young person, but now they're mainstream. The car. You don't see a car maker without a hybrid platform, and soon you won't see one without an electric vehicle platform that can wed to your solar system at home. So you're seeing tools and technologies that literally weren't available 10 years ago beginning to flood the marketplace. Now we're talking about batteries that can take your solar electricity and store it at night, so that if you have a home with a battery and the whole grid goes down, you're fine.
You're referring to Elon Musk's new plan?
Yes, I am. A multi-billion dollar investment in battery storage. Some say that it's not Tesla, the car company, he's making. It's a battery company that will give society access to basically self-contained energy systems that are going to revolutionize the whole way energy is developed, stored, and in time it's going to change the whole utility infrastructure.
We're speaking with Paul Rellis. He's the author of Out of the Wasteland, which is a book about the origins of the environmental movement on the Santa Barbara County South Coast following the oil spill in 1969 and where we've come since then. Paul, you say that the technology is out there, the Tools are out there, but they always seem to be priced just out of what the everyday person can afford. Is that the major stumbling block?
Well, price is always a stumbling block. But we, let me put it this way. When I was working early on in recycling, it was viewed that if houses raise the cost of a couple dollars, $3 a month to handle recyclable materials instead of having this dumped into the landfill, that that would be a prohibitive cost barrier. Well, in our case in California, the state passed a law and this was became mandatory, and people recycle and don't give it a second thought. That $2, $3 a month they're paying is long since been integrated into their household budgets. I'm working on bioenergy that will deliver the ability to run your heavy-duty trucks and buses on what we call biogas from all the organic waste that now goes into landfills. And that will cost households in the range of $2 a month to go from primitive landfill to very sophisticated technology to take this wasted resource and convert it into a zero carbon fuel. $2 a month, it's already beginning to enter the marketplace in Riverside County and Orange County, which are not known necessarily as leaders. They're not Berkeley's and they're not San Luis Obispo perhaps or Santa Barbara's. Why are they doing this? Because they want to be part of the future. And their ratepayers are agreeing to those levels of increase because they just think it's a back to the future technology and they want to be part of it.
For the time being, Paul, clearly we are in a petroleum-based society. Would you agree that we need to continue to look for new sources of petroleum in the meantime? And if so, what are your main concerns with that? And is there a way to have what's called clean coal or, you know, those sorts of things?
Well, I'm not an advocate of the fossil-free or the fossil fuel industry. I think it's a industry that we need to move away from, not encourage at this point. Obviously, the transition from an infrastructure that's built around oil and gas that has developed over 100 years is not going to be replaced overnight. This will be a matter of decades. But clearly, if I were to say, what would you invest in today? It would not be fossil fuels. It would be renewables. Of course, one needs to exercise discrimination in what one would invest in. But we're going to replace fossil fuels with renewables. California has already set its goals that way. Renewable energy is now embedded in the California economy. It's not just a pipe dream. We're looking at reducing use of fossil fuels by 50% in the next 20 years or so. We can now put and substitute fossil fuel natural gas with biogas that would go into the pipeline to replace a portion of fossil fuel natural gas. And we're still in the very early ages of this development. When you can wed the car to the solar system and achieve a good amount of your transportation from solar-based electricity or bio-based electricity, that's revolutionary. That's happening now. That's why companies like Tesla, big companies, or Google, or, I can't name them all, but there are many, many companies investing in these technologies because they think they're the future.
Paul, the Santa Barbara area may have been a launching pad for the environmental movement here in the United States. Where does it stand now? Just last year, Santa Barbara County residents failed to pass by a large margin ban on fracking practices within the oil industry. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I think that there were some issues related to the way that rolled out. It rolled out very fast. It wasn't run as the way one would run a campaign that was that ambitious. I think that that should not be viewed as a reflection of where we are with renewable energy. It was a attempt to accomplish something in a short time frame, and of course, massive resources were spent to defeat it. But let's look at it another way. Attempt was made to undermine California's AB 32, the climate change law, a few years ago with massive oil money thrown into the California election, and it was defeated soundly. So I think people are just getting more and more savvy. There will be issues like an election like that that I kind of look at as a skirmish, not the full story.
If you'd like to hear more about what Paul Relis believes is the current state of the environmental movement and the history of the environmental movement in the Santa Barbara area, you can hear him read sections from Out of the Wasteland. That's tomorrow night at Chaucer's Bookstore in Santa Barbara, and I imagine he'll sign a copy for you as well. Paul Relis, thank you so much for joining us here on Issues and Ideas.
Thank you.
And I'm Randall White here on KCBX-FM.